Welcome to the Alphaville Journal of Film and Screen Media podcast. Episode 1 for issue 16, Queer Media Temporalities. This podcast is presented by the co-editors of the special issue on queer media temporalities, Maria Pramaggiore, who is Professor of Media Studies at Maynooth University, and Pari Kerrigan, a PhD student and teaching fellow also at Maynooth University. Thanks for listening.
We'll begin by saying a few words about the projects that led us to editing this special issue on queer media temporalities. Pork?
Okay, so in relation to temporalities, it kind of formed the basis of my methodological approach within my own PhD research. So my PhD project was titled Queering in the Ears, Gay Visibility in the Irish Media from 1974 for 2014. So even within the title, we have temporalities to the front and the centre. So what the dissertation aimed to achieve was, or aimed to argue, was that visibility was used within this period by various Irish gay civil rights movements to strive towards activist potential, to strive towards a liberatory agenda, but also it was used by media economies and media institutions against those communities as well. So it wasn't just something that a community could claim ownership from, it was part of this tug of war dynamic. But within that PhD then, in terms of temporalities, periodization is kind of one of the main things that comes to the fore. So periodization, as we know, it's a discourse about time, a methodology developed in the discipline of history that assumes a linear chronological nature of time, past, present and future. So periodization, it's inherently heuristic and often teleological, as we know. So it's kind of trying to narrate a story of the past through the lens of the needs of the present and projections for the future. So within that in itself, even just establishing a time period to discuss this kind of can obfuscate a broader narrative of the Irish gay rights movement and of queer Ireland more broadly. You know, there wasn't necessarily gay people in Ireland from 1974 when my period starts. The story's a lot grander and a lot bigger. But this is what happens when we bring in these modes of periodizations, right? You know, these discourses of time can obfuscate the narrative. So again, as long as we're just aware of these temporal borders that are there and how constrictive these oftentimes can be, particularly in historiographical research such as mine. So they're kind of the main things that I've kind of discussed and talked about in terms of temporality throughout my research.
And it's quite interesting, Tupork, that the title of your dissertation, Reeling in the Years, is a reference to, or yours is Queering in the Years. It's a reference to Reeling in the Years, which is a series, and you can elaborate on this, that has a kind of backward look and a nostalgic look broadly at Irish history.
Absolutely. So Queering in the Years, again, a play on Reeling in the Years, which is a archive show which uses the audio and visual material in RTE's archives, compiles it into a 22-minute show that usually shows after the news, 6-1 News at 6:30 every Sunday, and it was voted Ireland's most popular show in 2008 by the RTE Guide. But it's essentially a look back on the recent modern Irish history. So that in itself can be quite self-reflexive at points. For example, when we're going through the 1980s and looking at the then Prime Minister Charles Haughey and looking at his narrative and his political trajectory beginning in the 1980s, we know how his story ended up. But seeing that being accounted for within that period really does kind of...
Hang on here. Not everyone listening will know how that story ended up.
Well, it's all available on YouTube for their perusal.
All right, we won't go into the history of Charlie Haughey here and his administration. I just want to say one more thing about your project before talking about the motivations for my interest in this special issue. And that's the way that your dissertation takes a look at temporalities, both in terms of periodization, also some of the temporalities of the media forms, when television programs aired and so on, and how that influenced audience. But also the fact that you're looking at temporalities in the context of queer media and queer culture, when for so long the dominant metaphor has been a spatial metaphor of the closet.
Absolutely. And just to kind of touch on what you discussed in terms of queer media temporalities and media temporalities per se, one of the things that I picked up on, and lots of things that people have said to me just about my research Like the single broadcasts in the 1970s and the 1980s, these were very, you know, once-off moments. If you didn't catch it, you didn't see it. So in that in itself, you had to be there in this temporal moment at that time to watch this show. And if you didn't, you missed it. So you were given audiences, Irish audiences in the 70s and 80s. Now, there were very minimal TV shows to watch, but if you were not sitting at 8 o'clock to watch Tuesday Report for that 55-minute period, you would not have gotten the glimpse into the Phoenix nightclub or the Hirschfeld Centre or any of the gay rights activism that was happening at the time. So it was essentially a very ephemeral thing that was happening. And even within that, cultural movements, oftentimes Judith Butler discusses the ideas of queer kinship and this kind of thing. Queer kinship structures did form around these media events. In the Hirschfeld Centre, for example, the night when Laurie and Arthur were aired on Week In, one of a gay couple that came out and just discussed on a current affairs show what it was like to live in Ireland and be gay as a couple, the community gathered to watch that go out live. So again, that in itself was a temporal event. They gathered at a moment to watch that. But again, it's a very ephemeral thing. You could miss it.
Absolutely. We'll come back to discussions of ephemerality and the archives, as you described Reeling in the Years as an archival show as well, when we turn to the special issue. Just in terms of my approach to the queer temporalities question, my last monograph analyzed Stanley Kubrick's film Barry Lyndon, which has a number of Irish connections in terms of the Thackeray novel on which it's based and the fact that Kubrick shot a good part of it in Ireland. And I had argued that it was a neglected film in the film study scholarship, given that there's so much written on Kubrick and there hadn't been no book written on Barry Lyndon, and found that it raises particular questions about temporality that relate to cinema, art history, human history, and politics. So again, addressing that question that you raised of linearity and boundaries. The film's unusual duration, everyone talked about it being very, very long, over 3 hours. It's long takes. It has an average shot length of something like 17 seconds. Wow. And it's highly aestheticized and slow-moving images and melancholic tone all contrast with the language that is articulated by a quite dry-eyed narrator, which of course comes from Thackeray, who assures us that once the people that we're watching on screen are dead, they are gone, that the figures we witness experiencing pain, conflict, lust, and triumph, the film is about love and war, are all equal now. And so I thought there was an important question in this work, and it really is in all of Kubrick's work, regarding the ideas we have about what lasts, what kind of culture lasts. In Barry Lyndon, the paintings on the wall we can recognize as culture that lasts through the centuries, but there are sort of goods and animals that are carried away from burning villages as the spoils of war, and they are ephemeral. So that certainly doesn't mean that war has less impact on the unfolding of time and culture. It's just that I found the way that we are constantly led to think about traditional forms of history, like the big stories of war, through this film in the way that it articulated a sense of time that was both a long, slow duration that you are sitting inside of and then completely gone once the film is over. So that sense of ephemerality as well. So from my work in queer cinema, my work on Barry Lyndon and Porrick's research on his dissertation, we began a discussion on queerness, on media temporalities, and the ways that both have been explicated in the theoretical literature from classic examples like Halberstam's In a Queer Time and Place or Lee Edelman's No Future, that there's a clear understanding, I'd say, or a consensus that queer temporalities have to do with this rejection of linearity, with more circular time, with, in some senses, regression or throwback to childhood and resistance of moving forward in culturally approved ways, marriage, reproduction, and so on. And then we started to think as well about the ways that media time has been re-theorized, that we have now media archaeologies, that new media and digital media have caused us to think about how rapidly formats appear and disappear, and that digital formats are changing so rapidly, we don't know what we actually can archive that will be still around in the future. So we have two articles that start off the special issue that deal with archives, but they deal with them in very, very different ways. So now, please, go ahead.
So in terms of the Renee Druyens article, Finding Lesbians in the Gaming Archive, in which she uses the case study of two games, and within those games, the queer characters, the lesbian characters, are not put front and centre of the narrative, and that in the game itself, you have to play as a character and gather various archival pieces to piece together the queer character. And that in itself was just kind of, I think, recalibrated notions on what's been theorised about the archives in itself. So it certainly challenges and uses this new media form that hasn't necessarily been given a lot of critical attention, even in terms of media temporalities as well as queer temporalities, and just challenges notions of the archive and the queer archive at that.
And archiving as an activity, and archiving as an opportunity. I like you, I found the article fascinating. The archiving in those games, you might miss the fact that those characters are queer at all. They don't sometimes actually have a presence. They're only there in their archives. And sometimes the archival presence is a vocal passage. In other words, talk about ephemeral, it's simply it's a time-based medium of a vocal imprint that is left behind. Similarly, Anyaka Igwe and J.D. Stokely's article on the archives asks us to think about temporality differently through the archive. They're quite interested in the critique of the archive from an anti-colonialist perspective. These are arguments that have been developed through Foucault and Derrida and some of the recent theorization of the archive. What I found most exciting about their article was the way that they integrate archival temporality into performance practice. They deliver audiovisual performances that draw on colonialist archives, particularly in Jamaica, and that rethink what should be in the archive, and they do that performatively. In other words, we understand archives as the record left by the colonizer of what they thought was important. And what Anyaka and JD do in their performances in some cases is to present a blank space and ask for their audiences to project what should be present in the archive, which I thought was just a really, really interesting strategy. So we can turn to the sort of next. It turns out we have almost pairings in this special issue, which looks like it was by design, but it may have been only unintentionally or subconsciously by design. The next set of articles are by Laura Stamm and Jules O'Dwyer, and they both deal with experimental film. As Pork said, we have a variety, a span, a range of media forms. And they both look to a sort of sense of kinship and specifically genealogy as it's expressed through the film medium. And in Laura Stamm's, that's an essay that looks at Derek Jarman as a sort of queer figure around which a new familial model and a new artistic model can be developed.
And similarly, O'Dwyer's article even looks at the figure of Vincent Dutre, French figure in queer curation, and examines the curatorial logic of Dutre's queer cinema through a close reading of Les Sons de Ténèbres, so an essay film by the filmmaker in itself. So within that, want to question the notion of experimental film and temporalities and all of these media temporalities as well within that work as well. So kind of a lot of parallels between both Stamm and O'Dwyer's articles, I would say.
And they both look at a sort of sense of autobiography, auto-curation, sort of looking at oneself and looking at one's childhood as a source of artistic vision and creativity, which I thought was a nice parallel between those two articles as well. When you think about temporality as a present persona recapturing or recuperating or reprocessing what that self was in the past. I mean, that's a quite complex temporality to address right there. And the final two articles by Travis Wagner and Justin Wyatt turn to video and television, respectively. Travis's essay is following a line of thought that's developed again by, you know, towering figure in queer studies, Jack Halberstam, in terms of the question of queer failure. And Travis looks at the videotape format and a lot of the nostalgia, perhaps, or fetishism around activist video that's been expressed in the scholarship, and asks about what it means for us to think about a haptic medium and about touching the past, as figures like Carolyn Dinshaw have argued about queer historiography, when the medium itself is actually damaged when we touch it, which is the case with videotape. And Travis Wagner also addresses in that article the non-linear temporalities that arise from the layering and ghosting of images on videotape that are recorded at different times and that emerge unbidden often when watched.
And Wyatt's article then, I think, kind of is a bit of a divergence from what we've seen in other articles, quite similar in some ways, but looks towards a more industrial aspect as well. So looks towards the media industries and how industries in themselves can shape temporalities and shape the times in which we can engage with media. So Wyatt uses the case study of the series Transparent, an Amazon Prime series, and he looks both textually and extra textually to understand how flexible and revolutionary digital TV can be, and how digital television in itself can transform, can challenge, can remediate aspects of queerness, and can become a mechanism for freeing both the television text and the business practices supporting it, as he explores throughout his article in itself. And even within the show, there are temporal things happening in relation to queer temporalities in the present day, but also referencing a queer history in Germany in the 1930s and 1940s. So, there's the 1940s.
A little earlier than that. Weimar, yes.
Germany, sorry.
That's okay.
So yeah, it rethinks the ways in which time, space, industries can shape temporalities as well.
Precisely. I was quite interested in Justin Wyatt's concept of the life cycle, because this is something that is described in terms of products, in terms of characters. The life cycle of a character, is it spun out into a different series on television and so on, which would have been a common practice. So there's a kind of real engagement with the format of television historically in that essay. So that is our special issue. I'm quite proud of the work of our contributors and ourselves. And I suppose I would just say for myself in conclusion, I'll give you a chance to say whatever you would like to add to that, that I think our goal of beginning a conversation about how the theorization of queer temporalities on the one hand and media temporalities on the other might intersect productively, because it is not transparent, so to speak, or it is not automatic to say that these temporalities would align with one another or would enable one another or would afford one another more, you know, opportunities. It's in the particular, and that's what's really interesting about these articles, it's in the particular media forms and the particular queernesses that are being addressed that we see the intersections and the productive, I suppose, speaking together of queer temporalities and media temporalities.
I think you've kind of said all of me there, Maria, but as you said in itself, the one thing I kind of want to pick out there is that it started a conversation. So kind of partly the reason why we went down this route with going with queer temporalities for the special issue was due to the fact that there was not necessarily much research done out there on it in relation to media and media temporalities. So hopefully this collection will incite a discourse around the issue and also will hopefully generate more articles and more interaction with that going forward, hopefully.
Let's hope. Well, I think that's a wrap. And thanks for your time, Porik. Thanks for listening. And we hope you enjoy our special issue of Alphaville Journal of Film and Screen Media.